Tape one, side one. National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Program. I am Mildred Menlo. With my partner, Ruth Weiner, we are interviewing Mr. Leon Arkus in his office on Thursday, June 25th, 1992.
By Paul Glavicki, who is teaching at the University of Pittsburgh, and a art critic, writer, painter named Mary Jean Kenton, who lives in, Rhinestone, Pennsylvania, which I think is a very amusing name. I also carry the work of Diane Samuels, and this is my coterie of artists from the Pittsburgh area that all of whom I feel we will hear further about and will make their mark. I'm very sure of this. And what makes me certain? I don't know. There are a lot of artists like Demon Korn and others. In fact, I'll go back to Willem de Kooning, all of whom I supported way back when nobody else did. So I think I'm doing all right. I've always felt that one must support their local artists, although I hate that name, local. They're artists or they're not artists, you see. I always supported them because I feel that unless we support our local artists, they will leave us. And we will never see any of these people mature. I think it's a very significant thing that we have people of quality here. This is the first time I've gotten excited about a group. And they are materializing. Mary Jean Kenton just came out of the Pittsburgh International. And she's having an exhibition at the Mattress Factory, opening this coming Saturday. Paul Glavicki has been working in Japan, will return there very shortly. He had to judge 700 films. This is an incredible job. He seems to survive all of this.
He is
Thank heavens, people are young.
Critic?
He also is a film animator. And I might say he's won the prizes at Cannes, at the Lincoln Center, Film Festival and others, often regarded, I think, as probably the outstanding American in this field, in this area. Actually, I've been on him to paint because I think he's a significant painter. And to do a film has taken him as long as 4 years, and I think that's an enormously long time to put out a 20-minute or 30-minute short. I just feel there's no, it's not really compensatory of the time he puts in.
But he could do more with painting. He could probably do more with painting.
Well, he can. He paints up the storm. He did the entire entrance gallery, painted a complete exhibition there, in no time flat. In fact, much of the painting was actually on the wall. He painted the wall itself. It was all wiped out. And I'm waiting now. The museum wants to buy the entire, they can use of the room. And that would be very nice.
Oh, that would be very nice.
About time. During my time at the museum, this issue of local artists has always been quite a problem. obviously, no museum in their eyes does enough for them. Well, frankly, in the same way that I rejected shows of black artists, put up an awful squawk against one exhibition we had of women artists, so I'm against, in a sense, local artists. You see, they are either artists or not. There is no such thing as good or bad art. In the same sense, there is no such thing as a woman artist or a male artist. What you are is your business, but essentially what you're judged by is what you see on the wall. And I resent the appellation. And I'm not alone in this. I mean, it's not unique. But I do want to say that as a museum director, there is a problem. And matter of fact, the first year I came here, there was a tremendous problem. And that was my primary assignment the first year, among other things, was to satisfy the local artists some way. And I started that series, which went on almost 26 years, of having 4 to 6 small exhibitions per year, each devoted to a local artist. And as I carefully explained to them, that they should be careful not to be concerned about notices, the ability to sell, or anything else. It was just a wonderful opportunity for them to see their work on a neutral wall, which is something very hard to do. You never get that chance, really.
It's a marvelous opportunity.
And so, I mean, there were bad results. We had a very interesting woman here named Betty Volka. She was given a horrible review, enough so that she left Pittsburgh. And she's now, I believe, out somewhere around San Francisco, working out there. But we lost the person. I don't know why Betty never took my advice and said, ignore these critics. Most of them are writing because they get paid for it. But you speak about critics. I wish I could remember the exact quotation from Turgenev. He wrote something, every time I sort of say this, it loses all spark and repetition. But he said there are people that like to write criticism, there are those that like to read it. But it had nothing to do whatsoever with the whole creative process. And he's absolutely right. Look, we do have a basic problem. Let's analyze what takes place today. We have, and we know this through the sale of materials and everything else, over 1 million so-called professional artists, and I don't know what a professional artist is, so please don't ask. But they are ones that sell their works, presumably, and are bucking for spots in various galleries throughout the land and everything else of that nature. At any rate, you have 1 million artists, and an argument I once had, a very rough one, with my board at the museum. And against me was a visitor, John Walker, then director of the National Gallery in Washington, who couldn't understand why I wanted to reduce the number of artists that were in the internationals. Now, for your information, the internationals at one time had as many as 400 to 500 artists. In fact, there's a music story about that. I ran into one day the Alfred Frankenstein, the great critic from, I think he was the San Francisco Chronicle, one of the few critics in this country that reviewed not only art, but also reviewed music on an equal plane, and a very top man. And I saw him, and I said, Alpha, heaven's sakes, I haven't seen you in years. What are you doing out here for this international? And he said, well, he said, let me explain this to you. He said, Leon, I once came here, and there were, he said, I think 600 artists. And I thought to myself that I spent 1 minute in front of each picture. He said, I'd be here for 10 hours.
But he came back.
What?
But he came back.
Oh, he came back out of curiosity.
He was meeting with your board.
To go back to the story of my board, I wanted to bring the 1970 International down to 100 artists with multiple examples of their work. By the way, I won that argument. But John Walker was putting up quite a bit of resistance. I wish he had stuck to his last, because he always thought that Impressionists were outrageous moderns. At any rate, finally, in desperation, I threw these large yellow pads and a pencil at his way and said, John, do you think you can write down any period of art, take any time you want, can you give me a list of 25 artists who have lasted over time? And he said, it'd be very easy. The conversation went on, and finally I looked his way. He was absolutely devastated. I don't think there were about a couple of dozen names all told, and they were all over the map. As a matter of fact, I was right. I did a good job of guessing. I have yet to find anybody who can readily name 24 artists existing at any one time in history. That gives you an idea. When I say artists, I mean people of significance. I don't mean all the anonymous people or the master of the three apples or something or other that was part of the Renaissance, or an artist whose work is known purely because of its relationship to time. It's got the patina of the ages on it, that's all. But when you're speaking about art, there aren't that many. And when you stop to think that we have over 1 million artists today, who in the world is going to make that choice? Who's going to select those that must be looked at? For that reason, we do need people of perspective. There are very few of them. I admired certain people. Harold Rosenberg of the New Yorker was wonderful. I'll never forget his jibe at the Guggenheim Museum when he said that it's the best museum for having seen paintings. But at any rate, there's also, Meyer Shapiro at Columbia University. He is a professor of the university. He has no specific area. And he can write on any subject in art. I know he can speak about the contemporary, about the old masters. What I like about him is there's nothing academic about his point of view. The man has an eye. I've always contended on this point, by the way, that the greatest living artist is Giotto. And when people say, but he's not alive, he died way back in the 14th century. My point is that his paintings are alive, and they live. You go look at his works in the little Arena Chapel. I walked in there the first time, came out 3 hours later, I couldn't turn my neck. I was absolutely that
Where was this?
Rec. Who was?
Where was it?
It's in Padua. It's one of the most sensational things. Years later, I heard Louis Kahn, the great architect, for the first time, he spoke here, by the way. It's when we became friends, because he was talking about his experience. He said, these paintings, he said, gasping for words. By the way, as Louis Kahn used to, he's a fabulous speaker. And by the way, an architect, and way off his subject. He says, they're amazing. He said, the people are bigger than the houses, and the animals obviously can't walk, and it's daylight, and the sky is black. And then after with an enormous gesture, well, what a painting. And really, that is the essence of, to me, of great perception.
What was your relationship with local art critics?
My own relationship? I got along very well with some. And when you have a local critic here, and I doubt you know him because he's dead, so I can speak of him. Douglas Naylor. No, it wasn't. It was Sam Hood. Sam Hood, who came in on a show I had of Giacometti drawings, and said the reason why he drew this way is because his name rhymed with spaghetti. Now this is what I call incredible criticism. And by the way, believe it or not, I've had to live through a lot of that. This goes back to the days before modern art became the thing of the day. You know, back in the early internationals here, one of my predecessors, Homer St. Gaudens, used to invite royal cortesos, critic of, it was the New York Herald Tribune. Cortesos used to come out here every year for the internationals and ridicule all the contemporary paintings. He would do this in front of an audience. And St. Gaudens abetted him in his actions. I find when he showed Matisse upside down, so it didn't matter which way you looked at him. I'm just giving you ideas of what the past was like. Few people think about that. Few people realize that when I first came here, and every time I'd go off for hunting for paintings for an international, my board would always say, mind you, I'm using the word always, they would always say, look, why don't you get us some paintings like you had the last time? I hate to say this, the squawk I heard every time you had an international was incredible. And this, well, don't forget, trustees are not art critics, are art perceptive people. But I don't think we have to put up, in a sense, the newspaper strike right now is a blessing, for me at least, because I don't have to read art criticism of local shows. But the sad thing is, it's devastating to the artists because they have no publicity whatsoever, and that's their only means of securing it. And so their shows are going empty.
We went to...
My favorite.
And,
that last show was absolutely...
Well, you know, I saw that show in New York.
Did you really?
Yeah, and the gal who...
what was the show, please?
Our Country's Good.
Our Country's Good, yes. The gal who played the main part, she's the one who gave that final speech and all, was the gal that was in the original production.
Oh, was she?
And my wife's on the board of the City Theater, and we just sat down until they made sure that that was going to come to Pittsburgh. But there's so much. That was an excellent show.
Excellent show.
By the way, it's an excellent play. I feel a lot of stuff that's done is pretty bad. Well, you don't expect that. I mean, what
they that's the most exciting theater, I think, in Pittsburgh.
That's real theater.
That's real theater. There hold on. Let me just get the name. We'll put it back
Wait,
on.
It's not on.
No, that's my one.
Yes,
so
I have it on.
I wanted. Oh, you do have it on?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted you to spell for me the name of that critic whom Homer St. Gaudens brought.
Royal, R-O-Y-A-L.
Yes.
Cortizos, C-O-R-T-I-S-S-O-Z. Now, look, if I'm wrong, it's not important. I can get it for you anytime you
All
want.
All right, it gives me an idea.
Cortizos. He was a long-time critic there. On the other hand, in that same period, there was a man named Henry McBride, who was probably one of the greatest critics that ever lived. And I still have yet to read anything of McBride's. Where he didn't hit the nail right on the head. And his way of summing up a situation was so superb. I mean, he once took a real blast at a painting that won a prize here by Leon Kroll, who was a good, first-rate academic painter. I mean, his stuff was inert. It looked clumsy, and so on. And he began talking about the characters in the painting, pointing out they looked like figures out of a Wagnerian opera that were absolutely static and incapable of saying anything, and none of them would sing. In this direction. Very funny. But actually, very perceptive. I think what's important is not essentially all of the verbiage, which seems to be the New York Times method of art reviewing. The more verbiage, the better the review, presumably. What's important is when you sum it all up in a single sentence or so forth. And really hit on the nerve. I'm going to make a point. You must realize that the unfortunate part about criticism is the critic. And in most cases, it is not the idea of aesthetics versus, rather, it's not a question of selection or anything else. What it becomes is the critic's need to place himself above the art. That is always apparent. It's always there. There are very few people able to really pay homage. They can't. It's very difficult. If they pay homage, it must be me and the pictures. And I'm afraid this is a psychological factor that you're going to contend with. We have a local critic here who can't write. Every time I read his criticism, I'm praying that nobody from out of town is looking at it. The man should take elementary English. And he describes art as though it reminds me a great deal, I guess, of my mother. I remember this way back. When she would call a friend and describe a dress she just bought, and all the terminology and all, I could see both women knew exactly what they were talking about, but it was a dress. And this is the way it's described.
You don't want to name names.
No, what's the point? Well, it's Donald Miller, obviously. The only person we have left anymore.
Yeah.
And he's without a job. In fact, I called him and told him how sorry I was because tell had not to have a job. On the other hand.
And in such a restricted field.
A big one?
And in such a restricted field.
Yeah, and he's not going to get another one. He just got married, you know, and he married a very nice woman. I'm sorry. It's quite a. Look, you forget old things. I mean, Donald used to shoot at me no matter whatever happened. I didn't give much of a darn. I don't take him seriously. But he is human. Got to worry about our fellow people. The on the other hand, I've been very much aware of what's going on in the city. This to me is a very important thing. I have to be very, very fond of Pittsburgh. I think it's a fabulous city. And coming from New York City, that may be a little bit interesting because I find Pittsburgh always has that wonderful potential. It's very much alive. It's never a dead city. A city like Philadelphia has no potential. It's there. It's finished. Pittsburgh has that growth factor, and that's what makes it exciting. And look what's happened in the last few years with the downtown section. The Cultural Trust, I think, has done a sensational job. These are interesting things. But let's take the other aspect of it. We have the symphony, the museum. Then we have a number of some very excellent groups, some very minor. I've just resigned from the board of the Pittsburgh New Music Ensemble. I resigned because, frankly, I go to their meetings and I can't hear a word that's being said, and I feel I have no point there. I can hear music perfectly. I can't hear a voice that well. And for that reason, it's pointless. And however, I think they've done an incredibly sensational job, the most difficult job in the world, trying to introduce people to contemporary music. I know what it was before it was fashionable to introduce people to contemporary art. And today it is fashionable.
Well, you have, to me, one of the best musical groups in the city.
One of the best what?
One of the best musical groups in the city is the chamber music.
Oh, Chamber Music Society.
Yes.
Yes, but have you noticed the deterioration?
They are marvelous.
Well, I don't know. They have brought fewer and fewer of the outstanding groups. The Guarneri comes here about once every 3 years. They can't afford the large groups. And there is a reason, because internally they are so old-fashioned, they refuse to go out and try to get money. They're the one organization that resents fundraising. They don't even apply for state grants. They've got a new setup now. I understand they're becoming very active just in recent time.
They have new director.
But it's been one of the most old fogey groups in the country. And by the way, until very recently, also continued the ban that for many years existed with the symphony on any contemporary works. Because people don't like contemporary works. Well, I've got to say something about that. The symphony is now going to reflect on that. They should. They have actually gotten themselves in the corner, and I don't know what's going to happen. Here, that the 1896 is the founding of the museum. So they're both going to have the same things happen.
The museum and the symphony.
Yeah. They're both now working on archival materials. They're both, I've got to go through all my history here with the archivists over there. And unfortunately, they don't even have a good one. That's not. But some of the ideas proposed embarrass me to the point of, this is kiddie fair. I mean, these are kids that should be sent to bed without their pizza. I mean, this is horrible stuff. The proposals, and for, this get me a lot of trouble here to use.
That's all right.
But this guy, Christopher, is running the darn place, speaks about, we don't want to bore people with certain things like Bach and so forth. This coming out of the president of the symphony. I don't know, sir. today, but deaf. I rarely go to symphony, and we subscribe, and I found that about three quarters of the year, we just give our tickets back, that's all. That's why they've got, and I've run into this, I'm trying to think of a man I constantly run into. I can't remember his name, he's pretty well known in the community, who sits there and just fumes about the program. He fumes. Devil with that, I had to sort of keep my sanity. Well, this is pretty bad. The only thing is, I am delighted by one reaction. I'm delighted that people are getting upset. Only through getting upset will you actually progress on to any sort of action. I know from my own experience in the field of art that we had the opposite reaction. Everybody fumed at us. I'm going back to the days when abstract expressionism suddenly came on the market. And this is my growing up period. And this abstract garbage.